From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. And please be advised, the following interview concerns a crime of a violent nature and may feature descriptions that could be inappropriate for sensitive or younger listeners.
Special emergency.
My name is Mary Lyons. I'm the banking center manager. We have a lady who is in our bank right now who says that her husband and children are being held at their house. The people are in a car outside the bank. She is getting $15,000 to bring out to them that if the police are told, they will kill the children and the husband. Her name is Jennifer Pettit, P-E-T-I-T.
Okay, she's still in the bank?
Yes, she is.
In July of 2007, the sleepy suburban town of Cheshire, Connecticut, woke up to a house set ablaze. Three fatalities, one survivor, and two suspects caught fleeing the scene. What started as a home invasion and robbery had ended in rape, arson, and a triple homicide. A new full-length documentary debuting on Monday, July 22nd on HBO explores how the Cheshire murder scarred a town, terrorized the survivors, and sparked public debate in a state poised then to abolish capital punishment. Joining me is Kate Davis and David Heilbronner, who together produced and directed the Cheshire murders. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Kate, a horrific crime here. We just went through some of the broad strokes of a truly terrible event. Could you fill in some of the details for us?
In 2007, two men invaded a home, a suburban home in Cheshire, Connecticut, which is a peaceful, quiet town nestled between New Haven and Hartford. They intended to apparently rob the house, but things became quickly out of control when they encountered the husband of a family sleeping downstairs, and one of the perpetrators whacked him very severely with a baseball bat. Following that was 6 hours of sort of protracted terrorizing of three women in the house, and eventually the house was set on fire.
And the wife of this Dr. Pettit, an endocrinologist who was hit in the head downstairs, you've got footage of her from the bank's cameras demanding money and telling the teller that there was something going on there. This crime ended up with her dead and her two daughters burned alive, as we learn, in their beds. I'm just wondering what drew you into this story.
We arrived in Cheshire about a week after the crime went down. Nothing made sense about this case at all. It was a series of mysteries that the film, over the course of, we spent 5 years making it, tries to unpack. And when I say there are mysteries, let me give you some examples. You know, as your show begins, here's a woman who walks into a bank and says, "Help, I'm being held hostage." And the bank calls the police, and everybody in her house was alive when she called the police. And how come everybody's dead later? The two perpetrators, we learned, had no history of violence. They had never done anything close to this. No arson, no sex abuse. And I'm a former prosecutor. That's really unusual. I mean, it's off the charts unusual. The father survived, yet the mother and daughters had died. So there were so many mysteries. And it was just the wrong town. Cheshire, Connecticut is like the nicest little white clapboard suburb. You have plenty of them in New Hampshire. So it was a case that immediately drew us in because we had so many questions that we needed to have answered.
We see in this town, this leafy suburb transformed by fear and shock, people suddenly installing alarms and panic rooms. And as you mentioned, you got there very shortly after the crime was committed and spoke to many people in the town. But the town itself of Cheshire and the police would not go on the record. Why not? What'd they tell you?
Well, the police is one of the real scandals within this film, and it was completely out of the blue because we arrived, as I say, shortly after the crime, and it was through probably the central character in the film, Cynthia Hawk Wren, whose sister was Jennifer Pettit, who's the mom who you heard on that 911 call. And Cindy wanted simply to know what happened. All she wanted. She said, "My sister died in this horrible crime. I don't know what happened." She writes letters to the police, and the police won't talk to her. They literally refused to respond to her letters. And she's going, "This is just bizarre." So she becomes sort of a one-woman detective in the course of this film. And eventually she finds the truth, which is embedded in the police records themselves, which were finally extracted at trial. And what she learns is that the police cover story is that they arrived at the house just as the perpetrators were running out the door and the house was burning down. And that turns out to be absolutely false. The reality is that the police arrived 30 minutes before the house was burning down, surrounded the house while everybody was alive, and stood outside and did nothing, just watched, didn't knock on the door, didn't pull out a bullhorn, didn't make a phone call. They had the number. And during the time, that's when Mrs. Pettit was strangled to death and raped. That's when the daughters were doused with gasoline and the house was set on fire, all of which could have been prevented because she had told the police, and or really through the bank, that her family was being held hostage, and the two hostage takers were separated at the time she told them, and she was safe in the bank. But what makes it worse to me, because I have a background in law enforcement and I'm really sympathetic, it's very hard to think fast in the field. What makes it worse is that not only did they concoct a cover story, but they froze out the Hawk family throughout this whole process. So not only are they lying about it, but they refuse to come clean ever to the very people who they're supposed to be serving and protecting.
My guests are filmmakers Kate Davis and David Heilbronner. Their documentary film, The Cheshire Murders, is debuting on HBO on Monday, July 22nd, detailing the horrific triple murder in the small New England town of Cheshire, Connecticut in 2007 and its aftermath, including an unfolding debate over capital punishment. And, David, you mentioned the search for justice and closure. Now, both suspects here offered to plead guilty in exchange for life sentences with no chance of parole. But that is refused. Who made the decision to take this to trial?
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's the state prosecutor, a man named Michael Darrington, basically the DA. But in any case like this, it's made in close consultation with victims. There's something called the Victims' Bill of Rights. It's not mentioned in the film, but this just there. And Dr. Pettit became a statewide advocate for the death penalty. He testified in the legislature when they were attempting to abolish the death penalty, and he made it quite clear that he thought the appropriate sentence in this case was death.
And as the case was brought to trial, it became clear that people on many different sides of this story had their own opinions about the death penalty. And so what the film also examines is whether the death penalty will satisfy the victims, so to speak, or help bring closure, and kind of what is the reality of imposing a death penalty. One aspect is that it requires a two-stage trial, and the second stage, the penalty phase, is particularly gruesome. They had to bring out evidence in sort of the most detailed way to prove that this crime was, you know, sort of warrants the death penalty. Many of the jurors ended up going into therapy for months afterwards. They had PTSD from just being on the jury. So you can imagine what the family members felt day after day, listening to the blow-by-blow accounts of that night.
Well, the case did come at a time when the Connecticut legislature was working to abolish the death penalty, and among those who had complicated feelings about it was Reverend Richard Hawk and his wife, Mary Bell, the parents of Jennifer Hawk Pettit and the grandparents of Haley and Michaela. This is a clip of him speaking from the film The Cheshire Murders, courtesy of HBO.
As a United Methodist minister, I am a minister of a church at large that is opposed to capital punishment. That has put me between a rock and a hard place.
We certainly don't approve of torture of people, but we feel that there has to be some justice in how people are dealt with when they are so inhumane in their treatment of others.
It's just another heartbreaking moment in this film, absolutely chilling to hear. But if you can't look at the story without investigating the lives of the perpetrators, and you talk to two former girlfriends of Joshua Komisarzewski, his immediate family would not go on record, the brothers of Stephen Hayes, who pretty much said, quote, he should fry. Given those prevailing thoughts, how did you approach getting the side of the perpetrators as filmmakers?
One of the things that I think is our guiding principle in this is we just wanted to get to the truth. If you label these two perpetrators as simply evil, it makes life very clean and simple, and you can just walk away and you wouldn't really be very interested. But if you want to understand why this crime happened, and even more important, how it could be prevented, you need to dig deeper. The whole country, very briefly, was all over this story, and Cheshire was inundated with trucks from ABC, NBC, Good Morning America, a million radio stations, and the whole town just shuttered their doors and said, this is awful, it was bad enough, please go away. But when the great tidal wave of press withdrew, we were still there, because HBO gave us the luxury of really hunkering down. And after a while, people began to realize we were on to something different than just, you know, tomorrow's news. And the perpetrators' families and friends, in the long run, you know, gave us their trust and told us stories that up until you see this film, you know, have never been revealed.
You spoke earlier about the difficulty and the expense of a long trial, but I'd love to play a clip from the film. This is Representative Michael Lawler. He's talking about the process of a death sentence trial, and this is from the film The Cheshire Murders, courtesy of HBO.
You have to go into gruesome detail about what happened, because the prosecutors must prove that the aggravating factors outweigh the mitigating factors, and the aggravating factor is unusually cruel and heinous. In other words, you have to prove that compared to other triple murders, this one is much worse. Once this gets underway, people are not going to like what they see, and it's just starting to get underway now. And so I guess I'd say to Dr. Pettit, you know, I don't know who's giving you advice, but I think if anyone's implying to you that there's a realistic hope that these guys would ever actually be executed, I think they're misleading you.
Well, so far it appears that Representative Lawler's predictions were true. Years of legal wrangling, millions of dollars, a death sentence for both Hayes and for Komisarzewski that may or may not ever be carried out. Now, did you get a sense whether the Pettit family feels like justice was indeed done?
Oh, I think that the Pettit family did feel that justice was done to a large extent. I was there at both, you know, sort of the final phases of the trial, and they clearly were deeply relieved when the death penalty was handed down to both Hayes and Komisarzewski. On the other hand, as Dr. Pettit has said publicly, does he feel like there's closure, that this is sort of the end of that chapter of his life? No. There are other main people in the film, such as Cindy Hochran, who is the sister of Jennifer Pettit, who I don't think cared enormously about the outcome of the trial one way or the other, that for her, justice is an elusive concept.
You know, there's an irony. Much as Michael Lawler's comments about you're not going to like what you see and this trial is going to put you through a second nightmare came to pass, it may well be that the painful process of watching all this, as awful and as protracted, as expensive as it was cathartic for the Pettit family. Dr. Pettit has moved on, and he is remarried and much happier than he has been by all accounts. And even Cindy Hochran, who attended trial and was in the film, you'll see, is in, you know, tears over learning details about exactly how her nieces died, was also keeping meticulous notes throughout the whole trial. And you'll see some of her notes, and she talks about it. It meant something to her to see all this drawn out. So it's a, you know, the film, we went out of our way to make sure it doesn't just, it's not a vehemently anti- or pro-death penalty film. It's really a journey. And you can come to your own conclusions afterwards as to how you feel about it. To my mind, the ultimate irony, the saddest, crazy, weirdest tragedy is that the state of Connecticut abolished death penalty immediately after this trial. And even though the legislature carved out an exception for previous death penalty convictions, which would include this case, it's pretty clear that these guys will never be executed, even though the state went through this incredible process. And that gives the film, you know, you breathe a sad and heavy sigh at the end, because after all this work, after all this effort, all the pain that everybody's suffered, We are no better off than we could have been 3 weeks after the crime, when both perpetrators said, we'll plead guilty, we'll go to jail for the rest of our lives, no possibility of release, and the state said no.
David Heilbronner, I just want to thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Virginia.
And Kate Davis, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having us.
Kate Davis and David Heilbronner's credits as filmmakers include the 2004 documentary Jockey. They made several films for HBO, including The Adolescent Addict and Diagnosis Bipolar, Five Families Search for Answers. Their most recent is called The Cheshire Murders, and it debuts on HBO on Monday, July 22nd at 9. You can find a link for more details and a conversation that's already ongoing about The Cheshire Murders film at wordofmouthradio.org. Coming up, a preview of a few local events taking place this weekend. It's summertime, and word of mouth continues in just a moment.